Now, last Monday was officially the most depressing day of the year. Why? Well, midwinter blues, post-Christmas debt, failure of New Year's resolutions. There's even a formula to calculate your lowest point. It's W plus big D minus little d times TQ over M times NA, where W is the weather, big D is debt, little d is monthly salary, T is time since Christmas, Q is time since you failed to your failed quit attempt, M is low motivation, and NA is the need to take action. So this week, therefore, officially is the most depressing week of the year. Therefore, it seems right to turn to Psalm 13. Please have open Psalm 13 in front of you, where David is in the depths of despair. Once again, a psalm that will bring comfort to God's people, but it'll also draw a line through this congregation. So please have Psalm 13 open in front of you. It's called a Psalm of David, and it begins, "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long will my enemy be exalted over me?" In May 1824, Adoniram Judson, missionary to Burma, was imprisoned. His legs were clamped in irons, and there he was left to rot. In his prison cell, a dark depression came over him. He felt a failure. He felt his labours for Christ were of no account. He felt responsible for the death of his second child. His first child had been buried at sea. And hope itself seemed eclipsed. He even thought of taking his own life, not even caring if it was a sin. Eventually he was released. But within a year, his wife, Nancy, had died. And then 6 months later, his little two-year-old daughter, Maria, also died. Now alone, he again fell into depression. And it would be another 2.5 years before he emerged from his darkness. Now, who was this man? Well, I quote, "He impressed an empire for Christ and laid the foundations of God's kingdom with imperishable granite in the heart of Burma. He was successful, one of the few men who mightily impressed the world for Christ." He was an extraordinary man of God, and yet it seemed that God had forgotten him. Now we all forget. I was reading about a man in the States. He took a taxi home from the airport. He'd been taking a series of meetings in a city several hundred miles away. And he got out of the cab, went up to his front door. His wife met him at the door, and she said, "Where's the car? Don't say you forgot that you drove there." So he had to take a taxi back to the airport, take the plane to the city several hundred miles away, pick up the car, and drive home. We all forget. Police had to console a woman at a service station. She stopped with her husband for a coffee, and then he'd driven off without her. He'd forgotten his wife. How do you recover from that, eh? We don't want to be in his shoes. We all forget. But can God forget? How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? Do you feel forgotten by God? Is life hard? And there's no let up? And whatever's going on the surface, underneath, you're not coping. And as far as you can see, there's no kindly light at the end of the tunnel. In fact, verse 3, the light is going from your eyes. There's that sense in which I can't carry on. Maybe I can't carry on as a Christian. And verse 2, the vultures are circling. How long will my enemy be exalted over me? Maybe it's illness or depression, old age, family heartaches, the death of a loved one. Maybe there are nagging questions which are just eating away at your faith, crushing responsibilities. Real problems at work, it's just not working out. Broken relationships. Maybe it's a sense of failure, Maybe it's just one trouble after another. And you feel you're cracking up. This is killing me. How long, O Lord? Well, let's look at then together at this short, but it's an intense psalm, isn't it? It has three parts, each of two verses, so we have 3 points. And point number one, when God seems far away. Verse 1, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long will my enemy be exalted over me? 4 times in 2 verses, David says, how long? And you know he's a man on the edge. We can put up with things for a time, can't we? And occasionally we think, oh, this seems to be going on forever. How much longer? But then we pass a threshold. We go beyond our pain threshold. We're taken beyond what we think we can bear. And then, it's not just how much longer. Then there is a plea, a cry. How long? How long? How much longer, Lord? This seems to be going on forever. How long? I can't take anymore. What are you doing to me? How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? If God was there for me, he'd never let it get like this. Can God forget? Can the eternal God forget forever? But says David, you've forgotten me. How long will you hide your face from me? So it's worse, isn't it? That man forgot his wife at the service station. But what if he'd driven away deliberately? What if God is deliberately turning away from David? What if God is deliberately turning away from me? What if, seeing my distress, God is pretending that he hasn't seen me? God has crossed the road. He's walked by on the other side. He's hiding his face. In my distress, God says, I don't know you. Lord, don't you care about me anymore? Don't you love me? Are you avoiding me? Is it something I've done? Look at verse 2. How long shall I take counsel in my soul? Now, to take counsel is to talk things over, is it? To take advice. But David says, I can't share this with anyone. Worse than that, I can't share it with God. I can't find the mind of God. I can't get to God. God has left me to my own devices. So my thoughts just go round and round and round and round and round. I've replayed this every which way. I've been looking for a way out. I've been looking for a way through. But I can't find a way out. I can't see it. I feel I'm lost in a maze. I feel my situation is impossible. There's no way out. Do you know that? And all you can hear is the sound of your own voice. How long shall I take counsel in my soul? Then says David, having sorrow in my heart daily. You know the feeling. You've been asleep. You've been happily drinking oblivion. And then you wake up, and when you wake up, you think, oh, something's not right. I know something's not quite right. I know. And then you remember what it is. Having sorrow in my heart daily. Sometimes the new day brings relief. Sometimes the darkest hour is before the dawn. But not for David. And my friend, maybe not for you. Every new day, new heartache. And verse 2, how long will my enemy be exalted over me? Says David, the vultures are circling. My enemies, they're loving every minute. Christians have enemies. They have enemies in the family, in the street, in the workplace. Enemies who are watching. Enemies who are willing the Christian to fall. Waiting for them to give up on God, to be able to point the finger and say, yeah, I told you so. And then, of course, there's the devil. The devil who's always got Christians in his sight, always waiting to turn things to his advantage. Especially when Christians feel that God has given up on them. The devil. Christian friend, if you go down, the devil will come and he will stamp on your head. So four times David cries, "How long?" You know this man's on the edge. This man is desperate. This man can't go on any longer. He's reached his limits, the end of his tether. He can't go any further. How long? I can't keep going. I can't hold on. Christian friend, can you identify with that? When God seems far away. But I want you to know notice something about the way David prays. There's a break in his logic. Now, what do I mean? Well, look at verse 1. If God really has forgotten him forever, why pray? If God really has turned his back on David, why bother? David, cut your losses. Walk out the door, slam it behind you, walk out on God, he's walked out on you, just forget him. And if there's a break in his logic, there's also a break in his theology. Verse 1, how long, O Lord? Will you forget me forever? And we thought about that word Lord last week. The Hebrew word is Yahweh. It's God's personal name. It's the name that God uses with his friends, with his people. Lord, Yahweh, he's the God who is personally involved. He's the God who is personally committed. He's the God who will never, ever, ever let his people go. So David uses God's personal name and all that it means, the God who cannot forget, the God who has pledged never to abandon his people. And then David says, but you've abandoned me. So the theology he confesses, Lord, is the theology that he denies. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? But if there's a break in his logic and a break in his theology, there's no rebuke here. Christian friends, he's being real. His soul is naked. His soul is raw. Now, sometimes our prayers are illogical. But the faith is real. And sometimes our theology has lost its footing. But we're being real with God. We're not pretending. We're not praying the thing that we think we ought to be praying in the way that we ought to pray it. We're being real. We're saying, Lord, this is where I'm at. And of course, far from God rebuking us, Psalm 13, he's giving us the very words with which to speak to him. So Christian friend, are you desperate? Do you feel you can't go on? Well, don't pray the prayer that you're supposed to pray. Pray the prayer that you feel. Speak from your heart. Best prayers are heart prayers. They're real prayers. Pray the prayer that is real. Tell him all that is in your heart. Well, look at now point number 2. Specific requests. And we move to verses 3 and 4. Consider and hear me, O Lord my God. Enlighten my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Lest my enemies say, I have prevailed against him. Lest those who trouble me rejoice when I am moved. Now, I love the start of verse 3. Look at what he says. He says, consider and hear me, O Lord my God. He's saying, consider. He's saying to God, look at me. Look at me. Hear me. Come on, answer me. Look at me and answer me. O Lord my God. Again, that word, Lord. He says, you're Yahweh. The Lord, the God who cannot forget. You're the God who saved me. You're the God who's promised never ever to forsake me. You're the God who is, what does he say? My God, O Lord, my God. A child with his father, he's my daddy. husband with his wife. She's my wife. A believer with his God. My God. He's saying, well, you may have disowned me, but I have not disowned you. You're my God. As far as I'm concerned, I'm yours and you're mine. You're my God. Christian friend, has God loved you with an everlasting love? Did God give his Son to the cross to save you from hell? Has he promised never to leave you, never to forsake you? Has he given you promise after promise after promise to bring you safely home to heaven? Is he my God? Will he abandon me now? So like David, petition him. Do what David says, look at me, I'm here. Look at me. Turn your face to me. Answer me. Because you're Yahweh. You're my God. You're Jehovah Jesus. You're my Jesus. If you've let go of me, I'm not letting go of you. So what does David ask? Verse 3, enlighten my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Now David was a soldier. In God's words, he'd shed much blood. Now, in those days, battles would last rarely longer than a day, because men were exhausted after a day's fighting. Can you see David walking the battlefield at the end of the day? Slaughter, carnage, blood. And there he picks out a friend who's mortally wounded. And he goes over and he cradles his friend in his lap. He looks into his face. And he can see the light departing from his eyes. And as the life of his comrade ebbs away, so his eyes grow dim until he sleeps the sleep of death. What does David pray? Enlighten my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. He's the wounded man, isn't he? Lord, I've been wounded. My life is ebbing away. The light is going out. Come to me. Cradle me. Look into my face. Make your face to shine upon my face. I'm about to die. Put your resurrection life into me. And stand me on my feet. Because if you don't, my enemies will say they've won. Verse 4. Lest my enemies say, I have prevailed against him. Lest those who trouble me rejoice when I am moved. What sort of God will you be if you are the God who abandons your people to their enemies? What sort of God are you if you forsake me at my point of greatest need? What sort of God are you if you give to Satan the last word, lest my enemies say, I have prevailed against him. Lest Satan says, I've won, I've got him. Do you really want to confirm the unbelieving in their unbelief? See what he's saying, Lord, it's your reputation that's on the line. Your name is bound up with the outcome of all of this. So don't let me go under. Not a knockout blow. Lord, no. Don't let me go down for the last time, but stand me on my feet. So, Christian friend, can all this really end in disaster? Is God unable to save his people in difficult times? Will he abandon you to the enemy of your soul? Are his promises to you so flimsy? When it comes to crunch time, he can't do anything about it. He leaves you. He abandons you. Then you know what to pray. And once again, David has given you the words with which to speak back to God. So when God seems far away, specific requests, and then we come to our final point. The outcome of all of this. Look what he says, verses 5 and 6. But I have trusted in your mercy. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. Now, something's been happening to David, hasn't it? The cry of how long in verses 1 and 2, there's a change of mood, isn't there? There's a calm as we come to verses 5 and 6. As David has prayed, as he's poured out his heart, he's changed. Now, his situation hasn't changed. It's still the same. But David isn't the same. As he's poured out his soul to God, so invisibly, God has poured his grace into David. In the language of James 4, verse 8, as he is drawn near to God, so God has drawn near to him. He's not so much seeing his situation in a different way. He's seeing God in a different way. Now look at verses 5 and 6. They form a deliberate pattern. It's what's described as a chiasmus. The first half of verse 5 parallels the second half of verse 6. He says, but I have trusted in your mercy, end of verse 6, because he has dealt bountifully with me. They're past tense. They're looking back. He's looking back at things. And then the second half of verse 5, that parallels the first half of verse 6. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord. They're future tense. They're looking forward. Having accused God of forgetting him, he's now remembering. He's now remembering what God has done for him. I've trusted in your mercy. Because he has dealt bountifully with me. And by looking back, by remembering what God has done, he is sure that this will have a happy ending. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord. He doesn't let the present undermine the past. Rather, he lets the past shape his expectations for the future. So David looks back. Verse 5, but I have trusted in your mercy. Now the word mercy, again, we looked at it last week. It's that Hebrew word, hesed. Mercy doesn't catch it at all. It's God's invincible, unchanging, devoted love. It's a love which says he's committed to his people. It's a love which says he's married to them forever. It's a covenant love. So remembering his covenant love, the love that he's shown me in time past, the God he has been to me, the promises he has made to me, my husband, well, the Lord won't walk out on me now. So Christian friend, whatever you're facing, what's the worst you've ever faced? What was the cataclysmic situation that you had to face up to? It's when you were condemned, wasn't it? When you're a guilty sinner. You're on your way to hell. You couldn't repent and you wouldn't believe and you were lost. You were a rebel. You hated God. You'd gone your own way. God wasn't going to bring you back. You wanted nothing to do with him. But what did God do? Think of the love. Think of this word hesed. In the New Testament we use the word grace. What did he do? God so loved you, he sent his son to save you. What does Paul say? But God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, when we were furthest away, Christ died for us. It was when you were furthest away, he died for you. And he so loved you, he called you by name. And he ran to meet you, didn't he? And you fell upon his kind arms. What were you doing? You were trusting in his mercy. You were trusting in his hesed. You were trusting in his wonderful covenant love. You were trusting in his grace. And that love saved you. It saved you from the cataclysmic disaster, didn't it? Well, has he brought you all this way? Has he done all that for you? Has he given his son to the death of the cross? Has he loved you when you were a rebel and a sinner and far from him? Has he done all of that to now abandon you? Now you're his. Now you're his child. Now you're looking to him. Now you're trusting in him. Has he saved you from the cataclysmic disaster only now to abandon you in this lesser disaster? It's unthinkable, isn't it? The great theologian B.B. Warfield, he was married to Annie. On their honeymoon, they were caught in a terrifying thunderstorm. And the experience so shocked his wife that she never fully recovered. And she was a virtual invalid for the rest of her life. And Warfield, he never left her side for more than 2 hours at a time. Extraordinary. Never from her for more than 2 hours at a time. His world was confined to Princeton and the care of his wife. He did it for 39 years. And one student commented on seeing them together. That's what the student said. The gentleness of his manner was striking proof of the loving care with which he surrounded her. That's a picture of covenant love. That's a picture of hesed, of the mercy that David speaks of here, of the love that will never, ever, ever let a child of God go. I have trusted in your mercy. God is devoted to his people. He surrounds them with his loving care. And what's more, David looks back to God's bountiful goodness, the end of verse 6, because he has dealt bountifully with me. Again, he's recalling. He's looking back to the past. So the past shapes his expectations for the future. Now, what could David reflect on? Well, we haven't got time. We're running out. But you can think all the things that God did for David. Well, Christian friend, what can you look back on? Count your blessings, name them one by one. Count your blessings, see what God has done. Count your blessings, name them one by one. And it will surprise you what the Lord has done. So Christian friend, look back. He saved you. And he's blessed you with every spiritual blessing in Christ Jesus. Has he done all that only to abandon you now? His love in time past forbids me to think he'll leave me at last in trouble to sink. So looking back and letting the past shape now your expectations for the future, you can look to the future with confidence, can't you? However bad things might now appear, which is what David does. I look at the past, I remember what God has been for me, done for me, and therefore, verse 5, my heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord. The Lord has made his people a singing people. He's put a new song in their mouth. And Christian friend, you will sing again. Every Christian's story has a happy ending. Can it be said of the child of God? Every child of God, whatever their story might be, it always, always, always has a happy ending. So let the past shape your expectations for the future. So, Christian friend, how long? Has God forgotten you? Is he far away? Psalm 13 gives you the words with which you can go to God and find your answers. But I said at the beginning, this psalm draws a line through this congregation. I was talking with a friend. We got onto the subject of death. He said to me, "Oh, stop depressing me. Let's change the subject. If last Monday was the most depressing day of the year, then perhaps death is the most depressing subject." He said, "Let's talk about something else. That's something cheery." It's like driving along a road towards a precipice. And the person says, "Oh, don't tell me what's at the end of the road. Just turn the music up." Is that what you're doing? If you're without Jesus, there is no happy ending. We go to eternity via the judgment. And you know what the verdict will be. You haven't loved God with all your heart. You haven't loved your neighbor as yourself. The Bible says the wages of sin is death. Eternal punishment in that other place. The Christian's greatest disaster lies behind them. "I have trusted in your mercy. He has dealt bountifully with me." It's been dealt with at Calvary, at the cross. Then I have peace with God and everlasting life. But without Christ, the disaster lies ahead. If you're without Christ tonight, your disaster lies ahead. This life is as good as it gets. And no Jesus, no happy ending. You'll go to hell. And when you get there, and you ask the question, "How long? How long? How long? How long?" The answer is forever. So you need to be saved, don't you? So what should you do? David's told you, verse 5. Trust in his mercy. Trust in his grace. Doesn't matter how old you are. Doesn't matter how long you've been in the far country. Doesn't matter what you've been up to while you've been there. The invitation is always, 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 come to Jesus Christ. Trust in his love. Trust in his grace. Trust in his mercy. Lord, you died upon a cross to save sinners from the ultimate disaster. To save a sinner like me. Surrender your life to him. Don't turn the music up. Don't pretend it's not happening. Come to Jesus Christ. And he will meet with you. And as you close with him, so your heart will rejoice in his salvation. And he'll put a new song in your mouth. And you'll sing to the Lord. Because he has dealt bountifully with you.